This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Theft by Finding, Diaries, 1977 to 2002. Written and read by David Sedaris.
For Dawn, Friendship Flower, Erickson. Author's note. Occasionally in this book I have changed people's names or slightly altered their physical descriptions. In some cases I've changed a name because the person in the preceding entry was also a Jim or a Mary, and I wanted to avoid confusion. How is it that I have so many Steves in my life and only one Thelma? I've rewritten things when they were unclear, or, as was more often the case in the early years, when the writing was clunky and uninviting. Introduction. Not long after deciding to release a book of diary entries, I came upon a 5-pound note. I'd been picking up trash alongside a country road in West Sussex, and there it was, between a potato chip bag and a half-full beer can that had drowned slugs in it. Given the exchange rate, the bill amounted to around $8.15, which, as my mother would have said, ain't nothing. A few days later, I met with my friend Pam in London. The subject of windfalls came up, and when I mentioned the money, she asked if I'd spent it. Well, of course, I said. In the UK, if you discover something of value and keep it, that's theft by finding, she told me. You're supposed to investigate whether it was lost or stolen, though in this case, £5, of course you're fine. Theft by finding. It was, I thought, the perfect title for this book. When it comes to subject matter, all diarists are different. I was never one to write about my feelings, in part because they weren't that interesting, even to me, but mainly because they were so likely to change. Other people's feelings, though, that was a different story. Got a bone to pick with your stepmother or the manager of the place where you worked until yesterday? Please, let's talk. If nothing else, a diary teaches you what you're interested in. Perhaps at the beginning you restrict yourself to issues of social injustice, or all the unfortunate people trapped beneath the rubble in Turkey or Italy or wherever the last great earthquake hit. You keep the diary you feel you should be keeping, the one that, if discovered by your mother or college roommate, would leave them thinking, if only I was as civic-minded / big-hearted / philosophical as Edward. After a year, you realize it takes time to rail against injustice, time you might better spend questioning fondue or describing those ferrets you couldn't afford. Unless, of course, social injustice is your thing, in which case knock yourself out. The point is to find out who you are and to be true to that person. Because so often you can't. Won't people turn away if they know the real me, you wonder? The me that hates my own child? That put my perfectly healthy dog to sleep? The me who thinks deep down that maybe The Wire was overrated? I do not think The Wire was overrated. What I prefer recording at the end, or, more recently, at the start of my day, are remarkable events that I have observed. Fistfights, accidents, a shopper arriving with a full cart of groceries in the express lane, bits of overheard conversation, and startling things people have told me. These people could be friends, but just as easily barbers, strangers on a plane, or cashiers. A number of their stories turned out to be urban legends, the neighbor of a relative whose dead cat was stolen from the trunk of a car, etc. I hope I've weeded those out. Then there are the jokes I've heard at parties and book signings over the years. They were obviously written by someone, all jokes are, but the authors are hardly ever credited in the retelling. Another thing I noticed while going through my 40 years of diaries is that many of the dates are wrong. For instance, there might be 3 October 1st, 1982s. This was most likely because I didn't know what day it was. Time tends to melt and run together when you don't have a job. In that pre-laptop era, you had to consult a newspaper or calendar to find out if it was Wednesday the 8th or Thursday the 9th. This involved getting up, so more often than not, I'd just stay put and guess. Quite often, I'd even get the month wrong. It might look like my average diary entry amounts to no more than 7 sentences, but in fact, I spend an inordinate amount of time writing about my day, around 45 minutes usually. If nothing big happened, I'll reflect on a newspaper article or a report I heard on the radio. I'm not big on weather writing, but have no policy against it. Thus, when life gets really dull, I'll just look out the window and describe the color of the sky. That will lead to something else most often, a bird being mean to another bird, or the noise a plane makes. Starting around 1979, I began numbering my entries. It's a habit I still maintain. December 28th, 2016. 1. It's only December and already. 2. Dad called on my birthday. "I'm trying to visualize where you're living," he said. "Are there a lot of power lines out where you are?" 3. Hugh stormed out of the kitchen yesterday, leaving me, Candy, Amy, and Ingrid, who was in the middle of a story about her mother. 4. I ran into Michael at the Waitrose. 5. Carrie Fisher died yesterday. 6. Hugh just came in and told me. This is what cavemen did before paragraphs were invented, and I'm not sure why I don't just indent or hit the space bar twice. Another old-fashioned practice I maintain is carrying a notebook, a small one I keep in my shirt pocket and never leave the house without. In it, I register all the little things that strike me, not in great detail, but just quickly. The following morning, I'll review what I jotted down and look for the most meaningful moment in the previous day, the one in which I felt truly present. It could have been seeing an old friend, or, just as likely, it could have been watching a stranger eat a sandwich with his eyes closed. That happened recently, and was riveting. Every so often, I'll record something that might entertain or enlighten someone, and those are the bits I set aside. I thought I'd eventually put them into a book of diary entries, but when the printout reached a height of 8 inches, I decided that maybe 2 volumes, the second of which will cover the years 2003 to 2017, would make more sense. It's worth mentioning that this is my edit. Of the roughly 8 million words handwritten or typed into my diary since September 5th, 1977, I'm including only a small fraction. An entirely different book from the same source material could make me appear nothing but evil, selfish, generous, or even, dare I say, sensitive. On any given day, I am all these things and more. Stupid, cheerful, misanthropic, cruel, narrow-minded, open, petty, the list goes on and on. A different edit, no doubt a more precise one, would have involved handing my diary over to someone else. But that is something I cannot imagine doing unless, perhaps, that person is a journalist. They never get beyond the third page, which they usually call the middle, as in, I'd hope to finish this before our interview, but I'm only in the middle. That said, I don't really expect anyone to listen to this from start to finish. It seems more like the sort of thing you might dip in and out of, like someone else's yearbook or a collection of jokes. It wasn't easy revisiting what are now 156 volumes of my diary. I broke the job up a month or two per day, but after reading about me, I'd have to spend the rest of the day being me. I don't know that I've ever done anything quite so exhausting. He would be in the next room and hear me shout things like, "Will you just shut up?" and "Who cares about the goddamn pocket square?" "Who are you talking to?" he'd ask. "Me in 2001, I'd answer. By then I could see the light at the end of the tunnel. The early years, 1977 to 1983, were the bleakest. I was writing my diaries by hand back then. The letters were small and fueled by meth. A typical entry would go on for pages, solid walls of words, and every last one of them complete bullshit. I've included very little of that time in this book. It's like listening to a crazy person. The gist is all you need, really. The diary lightened up when I moved to Chicago, partly because I was in a big city, but mainly because I felt so much better about myself. I'd finally done what I'd talked about doing for so many years. I'd left the town I grew up in. I'd gone back to college and actually graduated. There was all the more reason to feel good when, in the fall of 1990, I moved to New York. I was only writing at night back then, either smashed or getting there. You'd think I'd have addressed my drinking, at least in the privacy of my diary, but it's rarely mentioned. To type that word, alcoholic, would have made it real. So I never recounted the talking to's I got from Hugh and certain helpful people in my family. Similarly, it took me a while in the 1970s to write the word gay. Oh, please, I said out loud to my 20-year-old self while reading my earliest diaries. Who do you think you're kidding? This project made evident all the phases I've gone through over the years and how intensely. Oh, the ink that was spilled over finding the correct phone number of someone who'd obviously, and for good reason, given me a fake one. Over losing weight. Over my French homework. Later I'd throw myself into catching flies and feeding them to spiders, and all this leads me to wonder, what's next? Judging from my past, it could be anything. Collecting hair. Crossbreeding rodents in my basement. Who knows? I was also struck while rereading my diaries by the number of people I knew in 1980 whom I'm still close with now. It's so hard to predict which friends will last and which will fade away. Quite often I'd move and lose half the contacts in my address book, people I thought would be with me forever. It's not that we outgrew one another. They just couldn't be bothered to put a stamp on a letter, or I couldn't. Of course, it's easier now with email. It was interesting to read back through a diary and come upon someone who would wind up being very important, who would drop out of nowhere and change the direction of my life. Hugh, Jim McManus, Merrill Vladimir, Jeff Klosky, Ira Glass, Andy Ward. I'd have thought the initial meetings would be momentous, that I'd recognize salvation when it presented itself. There you are. But more often than not, each of them was just someone I shook hands with, then sat down later at my desk thinking, what was that person's name again? Hugh was different. Him, I remembered. With the others, though, it's sort of heartening. You never know whose hand you're going to shake. Then there were those who died. My mother, my sister Tiffany, Don Congdon, the lovely David Rakoff. I'd reread the entries that featured these people and curse myself for not including more. Why did I not transcribe their every word? And shouldn't I get cracking so that when friends and family members die in the future, I'll have something greater and more comforting to reflect upon? That's the thing with a diary, though. In order to record your life, you sort of need to live it. Not at your desk, but beyond it. Out in the world, where it's so beautiful and complex and painful that sometimes you just need to sit down and write about it. September 5th, Sacramento, California. Ronnie and I got a ride from Lonnie and Tammy, who were on their way to Mount Shasta. The state fair is in town, and Sherry Lewis is performing. We slept out in the open, next to the American River. September 8th, Mount Hood, Oregon. Sidetracked en route to Yakima. We met a couple named Pops and Jeannie who will pick us up at 6 tomorrow morning and take us to an orchard. Pops, who calls himself a fruit tramp, guessed that Ronnie and I might make $300 between the two of us before the season is over. We're sleeping tonight on a golf course. I feel the way I always feel before starting a new job. Nervous. September 11th, Odell, Oregon. I wonder how long 3 minutes is. My soft-boiled legs are on the wood stove, tumbling in their little pan. It's Sunday, our day off, raining. Ronnie and I are living in a wood cabin with a soft brass bed, a fridge, 4 chairs, a table, and lots of logs. Sometimes a cat comes in and I feed him, her, hot dogs. My socks are drying, the floor needs sweeping, and the couple in the trailer next door are eating. This morning I saw the wife trudging to the outhouse in her bathrobe. We're working for a man named Norm. His friends call him Pee-wee. It's cold enough outside to see my breath. Acorns are falling on the roof. October 20th, Vancouver, British Columbia. After a hotel for $8.50 a night, Ronnie and I found an apartment that's $30 a week for the both of us. I worry about money, but when it's gone, it's gone. I smoked my first cigarette. It's embarrassing, but you do get a buzz off it. I did anyway, on Davie Street. October 25th. I now own a black jacket and a pair of brown, heavy wool trousers that come up past my navel and button at the ankle. Canadian Army pants? When it comes to clothes, all anyone has to say is, "That looks good," and I'll buy it. So I was walking down the street in my new uniform, very happy, when a guy looked me over and said to his friend, "Who's a faggot?" Then I was just an idiot with stupid clothes on. Ronnie and I leave tomorrow. I'll be glad to go. The dryers in Canada cost 10 cents for 15 minutes. October 26th, Everett, Washington. At the Beehive Cafe, one egg is 25 cents. It's $2 for an egg at Denny's. Yesterday we were picked up by two fishermen, Ed and Riley. Then we got a ride with Mark, who let us sleep in his trailer. At 6 this morning, he bounded into the living room naked and said, "Let's go!" He had just returned from his high school reunion. He was in the band. October 27th, Blaine, Oregon. Some asshole stopped last night and pointed at Ronnie saying, "I'll take the girl." October 29th, Portland, Oregon. Ronnie and I are at the Broadway Hotel, a cheap and depressing place, scary. There is a real poor and a funky poor. This is the real kind. The lobby is full of dying old people, cripples, and a girl who ate hamburger after hamburger, pouring ketchup on every bite. Toilets are down the hall. Our carpet has vomit on it. We have a torn-up kitchen chair and a nasty bed. The second floor smells like donuts, but ours smells like puke and piss. Our fellow guests, winos and the down on their luck, are the ones our parents always warned us about. November 6th, San Francisco, California. I called home and talked to Mom. It was so nice to hear her voice. I didn't want to hang up. She said Paul was hurt that I hadn't written to him, but I just did a few days ago. November 9th, Bakersfield, California. We finally made it to Bakersfield. The countryside here is flat and scrubby. A guy named Doug gave us a nice long ride and told us about his cousin who got stabbed. Last night, under the stars in a pasture in our sleeping bags, I poured my guts out and said things I was afraid to admit even to myself. And you know what? It felt good and not as hopeless as I thought. All that had been inside for so long. November 11th. Kingman, Arizona. Last night we crawled into the dry, sandy riverbed next to the Texaco station across the road from the Liberty Bell Lounge and slept. It is warm, and we are waiting for Al, the Apache guy who rescued us from the Hoover Dam. Ronnie and I were there for hours. At one point, a patrolman stopped and told us we were in a bad place to get a ride. Duh. It got dark. Camping meant climbing sharp rocks to more sharp rocks. By the Coke machine at the Mead Lake lookout point, we ate a can of kidney beans. I can't recall the brand. No change, so no Coke. Then Al and Phil stopped. Their car was packed, but Al said he couldn't bear to see anyone stranded like that. They spent the night at the B&R Motel, but promised to fetch us this morning and carry us on to Phoenix. Someone said a few days ago, "Whatever you do, don't get stuck in Kingman." But Phil says, "Don't believe everything you hear, 50% of what you see." November 12th, Tucson, Arizona. There are a lot of older hitchhikers in Tucson. At the urinal, I met Jimmy Buck. He offered us a ride to Texas, 600 miles, if we'd help him unload a truck full of grapes. We did, and are on our way. November 16th, Temple, Texas. Civilization means not waiting 5 hours for a ride. Round Rock is civilized. Austin is, too. But I'm not so sure about Temple. Right after I wrote that, a Scientologist and a Rambler drove up. A mural painter from Dallas. A good guy. Ronnie left her guitar in his car. "So long, guitar." The Scientologist played tapes. we smoked pot. In Austin, we were picked up by an alcoholic. He's been arrested for drunk driving 4 times. SOL, he says, shit out of luck. He said he wasn't drunk now, but would definitely be arrested if they gave him a breathalyzer. November 21st. West Virginia? Ronnie and I went our separate ways in Cullowhee. She's heading to Raleigh, and I'm underneath an interstate bridge waiting for the rain to calm down. Several of the drivers that stopped today took off laughing just as I reached their cars, looking grateful and relieved. There are a lot of dead birds down here. I feel itchy. November 23rd, Kent, Ohio. I got here yesterday afternoon, then Todd and I each took 3 hits of sugar cube acid, too much. It was a real bad trip, like torture, enough to turn someone into a Christian. I've been up for 2 days. Coming here by myself from Cullowhee, I had my first bad ride. A 35-year-old with flag decals on the windshield of his pickup truck, Ray T, his name was. He picked me up in Knoxville and said he'd take me 40 miles. First, he spent 3 hours playing pool and drinking beer. I waited outside in a rocking chair and smoked a joint. I should have left, but the highway was deserted, no cars, and I was 20 miles from the interstate. After Ray T left the bar, he was weaving and slurring his words. I figured I'd get out once we hit a busy road because you don't really want to be in a car with a drunk. His conversation was hard to follow, and he stopped every mile or so to pee or light a cigarette. When he saw 2 girls hitchhiking, he picked them up and gave them a ride to their door. Then he had a cheeseburger. It started to rain. When we hit the interstate, I said, "You can just let me out here." He said no, he wouldn't let me hitchhike in this weather. He said I had to spend the night with him. He was drunk and yelling, "Ray T always gets what he wants, and this is what I want." I asked him again to let me out, and he said no. Then he started asking me questions. "When was the last time you jacked off? Sometimes does it get hard just thinking about it?" He told me to move close to him, and when I said no, he grabbed me and yanked me over and stuck his hand down my pants. I was afraid. It was late, raining, and he was speeding and drunk. If I'd hit him or tried to get away, we could have had an accident. I was scared and humiliated. When he pulled off onto a smaller road, I opened the door and jumped out. He stopped and I grabbed my wet knapsack from the back and ran. It was cold and I heard him come after me. Then he got back in his truck and when I saw it heading in my direction, I hid. After he drove off, I turned and ran onto the interstate and waved my arms. In a few minutes, 3 assholes stopped and took me to Cincinnati. They were from Illinois and threw cans out the window. One of them said that niggers should still be slaves. I thought, oh boy, what a day. December 1st, West Virginia. I'm in a seafood place drinking coffee. I need to get to Raleigh, but so far rides are sparse. I have a joint and $3. I remember being appalled when David Larson hitchhiked to North Carolina with $1 in his pocket, and now here I am. I started my day with a ceramic pig but abandoned it after it got to be a drag to carry. December 15th, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I found a job today just like I told myself I would. $3 an hour washing dishes at the Carolina Coffee Shop. January 13th, Chapel Hill. 1. I'm cold. 2. I'm bored. 3. I spilled a glass of ginger ale on the floor and have nothing to clean it up with. 4. I went to the grocery store and spent $5.37 on total crap. 5. I made beans and franks on my hot plate and it was just a mushy mess. 6. I want to be in school. 7. My radio is suffering from me falling asleep on it. February 23rd. I am totally frustrated and can't relieve it. Nothing to go back to and nothing to look forward to. Date unknown, 1978, Raleigh, North Carolina. Last night, Dad caught me off guard by asking me to leave and not come back. We can't begin to reason with each other. I said awful things, and he said he wanted to smother me. I cried, and I'm glad. Gretchen says the 3 best times to smoke a cigarette are 1. After food. 2, after sex, 3, after crying. I hadn't cried since I started smoking, and she was right. It was a good cigarette. Then Gretchen cried. She always comes to my defense. What would I do without her? And Mom cried, and Lisa. Everyone cried but Dad. Now he says that Thursday night he wants to talk to me. I'm guessing the topic will be self-respect. April 19th, Chapel Hill. June 14th, Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. Overheard. I always thought I was close to God, but climbing those mountains, I mean, it just brought me closer. If welfare can buy these niggers a Cadillac, it can buy some poor white kid a horse. June 23rd, Chapel Hill. I have $211, and it doesn't make any sense. September 6th, Odell, Oregon. I'm back in Odell, finally, in the trailer instead of the cabin. Promoted? Norm begins many of his sentences with the words, "A guy oughta." He told me that the cherry crop was good and that his dog Ringo died. I have 5 days until apple picking starts. September 10th. I scrub my trailer floors with janitor and a drum and listen to the radio, country music mainly. Talk to Rodrigo, who uses come back here as a verb, meaning to come back. Nosotros come back amos. We come back. September 13th. Picking started. Apple Betty, the cat I let in, is eating a tea bag, and I'm too tired to stop her. September 18th. Norm came by, very drunk. We both smoke menthols. He likes to explain things about farming. He says, "Why heck, Dave? Why heck, Dave? You should come back here in the summer and hike and camp." He has confidence in my picking, though I drop a lot and sometimes break branches. Breaking branches is called trashing. Skirting is picking the low-hanging fruit off someone else's tree. This is what Norm calls an oaky tactic. September 22nd. We began the Bosque pairs today, just me and Jesus. Norm dismissed all the others, all Mexicans. They like to have a good time at night, using their car headlights as lamps, and always with the radio on. They were late this morning, so that was it. Fired. Tonight, I went to the grocery store. I ran up a bill of $6.50 with only $1 to pay for it. September 26th. While picking today, I thought about capital punishment, Alaska, Eudora Welty, and blindness. If you talk to people, you can have whatever you want. No matter where you go, you cannot escape the Bee Gees, either on the radio or on a jukebox. I once considered suing Farrah Fawcett for invasion of privacy. Hardly a day passed when I didn't see her on a magazine cover, an ad, a poster. She was destroying my life, but now she's okay. Ronnie was the first person I met who didn't live at home. That year in Colowey, we went to see The Day of the Locust, my favorite movie. The man at the box office gave us a discount, saying, "I can't charge full price for something without a plot." September 28th. In 1951, Norm worked at the sawmill, and a guy named Barney Bailey gave him the nickname Pee-wee, which is what everyone here calls him. Barney Bailey has a wife he calls Buffalo Grass, Buffalo Grass Bailey. After filling the final pear bin, Norm, Jesus, and I drank beer. I made $211.24 this season. Back in Raleigh, I have $150 in savings. That's a total of $361.24. I am optimistic that things will fall into place, and one day I'll be sitting in New York City with correct bus fare in my pocket. September 29th. I hitched to the employment office in Hood River and talked to a woman named Sylvia. She is sending me to a fruit packing plant, $3.41 an hour, to sort the bad apples from the good. She said, "And my, it's tedious." I would work from 4 to 12 at night. October 1st, Newport, Oregon. Leaving Hood River, I was picked up hitchhiking by a man named John, who wants me to work for him, cutting and polishing jade and taking things to the crafts market in Portland. I can also clean his pool, help finish his sailboat, and install solar panels on his house. He said at one point or another, 1, you haven't lived until you've sailed. 2, I had a bubble put on top. 3, the day will come for you to marry. 4, I have wooden legs. He's invited me to his workshop on Tuesday morning. October 2nd, Odell. Yesterday was one of those miserable days for hitchhiking. It took almost 13 hours to get back from Ted's place in Newport, most of it walking. My first ride was with a Catholic priest. He was in robes and had a rifle in the back seat. Later, I found $14.50 worth of unwrapped gay sex magazines in the woods when I hiked off the road to pee. What are the chances? I think the guys posing were all in jail at one time or another. They're all skinny with acne, and it's pretty clear they aren't enjoying themselves. October 3rd. I went to John's and saw his studio. He explained what all the tools do, and then he suggested that he could pay me in Christmas gifts. If he has a pool, 2 cars, 2 streamlined trailers, and a home with 2 fireplaces in it, he can pay me in real money. I don't think his wife likes me too much. Christians are strange people. I went to the packing house at 4. The pre-size machine is broken, so now I won't start until Thursday. October 4th. John wants me to go to church with his family this weekend. He tells me that my life is empty, but it isn't quite, because I bought some pot today. October 5th. Halfway through my first shift at the packing plant, I realized I had never imagined anything could be so boring. I remove leaves from pears and discard them into a wet, ever-growing pile. All of us in rubber gloves, our eyes dead. In the break room, the women talk about canning their backyard fruit. October 12th. I am now a Teamster, Local 607. I had no choice. I asked the woman on the belt what it means exactly, but no one really understands it. Membership is $25. Dues are $12.50 a month. There's free medical and dental, but only after 3 years, by which point you'd be insane. October 16th. After I paid my membership and first month's dues, Duckwall Pooley cut its night packing crew. Workers with seniority were given the 16 jobs in pre-size, so until at least the middle of November, I'm laid off and will have to live on John's $2 an hour. On the way home after getting the news, I came across a very drunk Mexican guy whose car was in a ditch. It was Jesus's brother. Because I didn't know what else to do, I brought him back to my trailer. We were up until 4, me talking my high school Spanish. Now it's 7, I'm at Scotty's cafe, and he's asleep in my bed. With the layoff, I'm worried about money. 2 people at the plant told me about a possible job picking mushrooms underground with a miner's hat on. I'm not so sure about John. On Sunday, he took me to his church. There was a lot of swaying back and forth, a lot of crying and praising his name. Then I went to lunch at his house. They don't allow their kids to trick-or-treat. On the way home, he told me how he lost his legs. Then he removed one and showed me the stump, which made me think of a denuded chicken wing. October 17th. Today my shoes are twice as heavy. They're also green. Everything is green from the chrome oxide I used to polish John's jade. The insides of my ears are green. So is my snot. John has a 15-foot-long, 5-foot-tall block of jade that was originally bought by General Perón in Argentina, who wanted a statue of his wife, Eva, carved from it. John says it cost $100,000, minus, I guess, the $14 he paid me today to polish a few thin slices of it. October 30th. Sylvia from the employment office invited me to have dinner with her family. Everyone ate something different, her husband meatloaf, her grandson a pork chop, me a hamburger, and her cottage cheese. She played fiddler on the roof and danced around her kitchen. What a delight she is. John's legs were aching at work, so he took them off and rolled around in a wheelchair. He was in the Merchant Marines. Meanwhile, I hear the plant is laying people back on. October 31st. I gave a guy at the plant my address, and last night he came by. Tom has a rose tattooed on his shoulder and two hearts on his forearm. We went to the trailer where he lives with his mother, and maybe one day I'll get into what happened there. Right now, I want to take a bus to Kent. I want to be with my friends, not going to church with John or staring down a dildo collection at Tom's. It's up to me. In a week, I could be in Ohio, or I could still be here. November 9th. Tom came by, mad. He said, "I thought we were friends." Then he said that friends have sex, and it doesn't matter whether I want to or not. I should just do it because he wants to. Before he left, he told me that I'll never find anyone to love. To hell with him. I'm saving myself for marriage. I seem to grow more confused every day. Sometimes I think I was better off in Chapel Hill or Kent, just getting high and hanging out. Also, it's so cold here, too cold to do anything but sit in front of the space heater. Right now, I'm wearing long underwear, a flannel shirt, a pajama shirt, a sweater, a jacket, a coat, and a hat. Inside. Later, I plugged in a second space heater. It worked for 2 minutes before the circuit blew. Then it was back to the cold, only with no lights. I tried to cry, but nothing came out, so I coughed instead. This morning, Norm fixed the circuit, and I began to winterize my trailer with a new sense of urgency. November 30th. John hung a sign in the workshop that reads, "Jesus is Lord here." The good news is that I start back at Duckwall Pooley on Monday. 2 weeks later, I'll be on a bus headed home. December 5th. I don't pull leaves off apples and pears anymore. Now I'm in bin repair. My hands are bloody ribbons. I lug, staple, and nail the 150-pound crates the fruit arrives in. When there's nothing to do, I don't have to pretend there's something to do. It's humiliating to have to look busy. Mexicans have been great for rides lately, especially young ones. It's so hard to put things into focus right now. Maybe in a few years I can make sense of this fall in Oregon. These are just notes. By then, though, this time will be touched by sentiment. December 16th. I've returned all of my library books and given the orchard cat a big Christmas can of dog food. My last ride home from work was with a Bridge of the Gods toll collector. He looked like a Punch and Judy puppet, and said that in the summertime the job pays off because young women wear scanties, and you're never too old to take a peek. John wanted me to carry a package to Cheyenne, but changed his mind. So that's it. My next bed will be in Raleigh. January 1st, Raleigh. On New Year's Eve, Ronnie's friend Avi and I rode on the street with Valium. Later, we went to his friend Julia's. She has a cardinal in her freezer. I saw it. January 18th. I have been working at the Empire, my new name for Mom and Dad's rental properties. Today, Mom helped, and she and I talked about prayer in school. She is an agnostic. The Phil Donahue Show has gotten her thinking. Today she said, "The Bible's view of women stinks." January 19th. Amy babysits and scours the houses for dirty magazines, which she then brings home. She really is divine for her age, 17. Today, while I shoveled the driveway, she asked what I thought the filthiest word was. I said cunt. In her opinion, it's fuckwad. She said it sends chills down her spine. The other day we went to see Midnight Express. She was really loud during the torture scenes and kept squirming in her seat saying, "Shit, oh shit." January 20th. I met and went home with Eduardo, a 28-year-old Costa Rican now living in Raleigh. It's fun to see where people live. Eduardo has quite a few blacklight posters. I never thought I'd do this. Go home with strangers. but it's okay with the right stranger. January 24th. For the umpteenth time, I am swearing off drugs. Lily and I took acid and then rubbed MDA into our gums. It was great in her apartment. Then we went to a dinner party for a while. Then we went to see Pink Flamingos. Then back to her place where I prayed until I fell asleep. Lesson, never be where you don't want to be on acid. January 29th. Today I worked at the Empire on Gloria Penny's sewer line. Her backyard was covered with lumps of shit and green toilet paper. In current events, a 16-year-old in San Diego opened fire on an elementary school playground with an M16 and 250 rounds of ammunition. The Pope is in Mexico. March 1st. I'm depressed because I withdrew $75 from my savings account. It's the same passbook I've had since 1966, and I'm only on the third page. March 8th. New York, New York. All over downtown, I'm seeing posters reading, doctor's warning, deadly disease, leprosy disease. Stay away from the women tramps. Men caught leprosy and tuberculosis from the women tramps. You will endanger your family with deadly disease. Stay away from all women tramps, or you will be in a bad ward and suffer terrible the rest of your life with tuberculosis and leprosy. March 11th, Raleigh. On our way home from New York, Lily and I stopped in Baltimore, where we went to Edith's shopping bag and got Edie Massey's autograph. She was in Pink Flamingos and Female Trouble and will be in Polyester, which isn't out yet. I bought a magazine. Lily got a button. And when we told Edie she looked good, she pulled off her nice hair and screeched, "It's a wig!" Every man on the street was old and dirty and looked like he was on his way to an adult bookstore. March 28th. I found a job. Today I'll work, really work, for the first time since December. I've been hired as a waiter at a little restaurant next to the Arthur Murray Dance Studio called the Breakfast House, so I'm up at 5. The last time I was up at 5 was because I hadn't gone to bed yet. March 29th. Everyone at the job is very nice, especially Mary the cook. I made $13 in tips, mostly in dimes and quarters. There was an accident yesterday at the Three Mile Island nuclear plant, so a lot of people talked about it. April 16th. Dad on friendship. Sure, some people are nice, real nice, nice like carpet so you can walk all over them. May 3rd. I am in trouble with Lisa's landlady, Cleo. Last night, Dee came to visit with a friend. They were loud on the stairs. Cleo was woken up by the noise and called me saying, "Now listen, Andrew, we can't have this." "I'm sorry," I said, "it won't, we just can't have it." I hope I haven't gotten Lisa evicted. She's at Bob's every night, but still, it's her apartment. All the tenants here are old, and everything bothers them. They make me think of Mrs. Covington, who comes into the Breakfast House every day. She complains if I don't fill her coffee cup to the top, and then when I do, she complains that it's too full. So, I'm in trouble, and need to find an apartment by next Friday. May 7th. Ronnie and I spent the day apartment hunting. My best option is in the house next door to the IHOP with a fireplace, a finished-off sun porch I could use as a bedroom, a living room, and a small kitchen. The bathtub is almost miniature. We talked to a landlord with an apartment on Ash Avenue. He said he would rent to me if, 1, I am not an atheist, 2, I do not carouse, 3, I do not smoke marijuana, 4, I do not have parties, a $50 per person fee is charged for every jerk I invite. 5, I do not have black friends. 6, my friends don't belong to any hate groups like the NAACP that calls us white people honkies. 7, I don't get pregnant, he evicts unmarried pregnant women. He said all of this seriously, and afterwards, Ronnie gave me a pair of pants. May 12th. Yesterday was move-in day into the apartment next to the IHOP. The place is bigger than I remembered. It feels nice and empty, and after getting settled, I took some LSD. Not enough to see God, and not enough to think too much. May 17th. Gas in 4 states is now selling for over $1 a gallon. I'd love to work in a service station just so I could hear people complain. Apartment life is good. I'm using my ironing board as a kitchen table. May 21st. Nell Styron is the hostess of the upstairs restaurant, and today was the first time I'd seen her without a bow in her hair. Ronnie and I ate there this afternoon. We had taken some acid, so we had borscht for the pretty color. I'm so afraid lately that she'll get hurt or killed. What would I do without her? May 24th. Something cruel. Yesterday, I caught a wasp and put him in a jar in the living room. Later, I threw in a dead bee, and the wasp chewed it up. Last night, I poured Canada Dry and Comet into the jar. The wasp rolled over on his back, kicked up his legs, and died in a matter of minutes. I felt really bad about it. Lots of people kill wasps, but I made it suffer. He was large, though, so I figured it was either him or me. I really try to refrain from marijuana until at least 10:30 at night, but when it's put in front of me, I forget how miserable it makes me feel. I get nauseated and don't move around as much. At night, though, I take a bath and listen to the radio. At night, it's great. June 1st. Conversations at work. Me. Are you Italian? Italian guy. Just do your job and mind your own business. June 3rd. Conversation I overheard at the IHOP. Woman. Excuse me, may I join you for a moment? Billy, who is blind and doesn't wear dark glasses. Yes, ma'am. You can't see me. I'm just an old woman with a favor to ask. Yes? I'd like to pay for your meal. I'm from Durham. Have you lived in Durham all your life? Yes, my husband died unexpectedly. Here's a $10 bill. I've been blind since I was born. Trust in the Lord, he's all we've got now. Yes, all we've got. Yes, yes. Did you ask how old I am? No. Well, God bless you. Yes, you too. June 6th. A joke Jane at work told me. Man to a woman he'd just screwed. If I'd known you were a virgin, I'd have taken more time. Woman. If I'd known you had more time, I would have taken my pantyhose off. June 13th. I was walking home when someone in a passing car leaned out the window and spat right in the center of my face. I am reading the world according to Garp. June 14th. On the bus yesterday morning, I ran into Dee, who has a mohawk and goes to court tomorrow on 2 counts of drunk and disorderly conduct, 1 count of trespassing, and 1 count of urinating on a woman's leg. She'd promised to sleep with him if he bought her beers, so he did. Then she ran off with her friends, so he caught up and peed on her skirt. June 21st. This morning I found $6 in the parking lot of the Arthur Murray Dance Studio. In the 9th grade I found $1, but since then it's just been change. Jane called in sick at the restaurant today, so I worked alone and made $25, part of which I spent immediately on a dime bag and part of which I spent later on paint. June 29th. Miss Woodard was my teacher in the 3rd grade. She was Paul and Amy's as well. On June 7th, she retired, and the school proclaimed her a champ. One day when I had her, a kid wet his pants during geography, and she told the class that Steve was just excited about learning. Even in 1964, I thought that was funny. July 1st. It's been a couple of days since I've written. Friday night, I took some LSD and arranged 5 yellow Kodak boxes in the front yard. It was good acid. It made me notice color a lot, and I could read and not get depressed. Saturday I took some crystal and spent all night doing rubbings of envelopes. Now I'll be off for 3 days. I found out that Jack and Mary, the night managers at work, secretly refer to me as the Space Cadet. God, that makes me mad. July 6th. Yesterday afternoon, 3 black women beckoned me to their car and told me that my fly was down. I thank them because nobody ever tells you things like that. July 7th. Last night, after taking a bath and ironing, I went to the Capitol Corral, gay bar, and met Elle, who was older than me, maybe 35. We talked about the normal things you talk about, and then came back here. He didn't say anything about my artwork, but suggested right away that we sit on the bed in our underwear, but Elle wasn't wearing underwear. Instead, he had on diapers and rubber pants. I was not braced. Elle's favorite phrase was, a real turn-on. Diapers were a real turn-on, as was being peed on and being five. Daddy, he said, if I was your little boy, how would you dress me? Would my little rubber pants be tight? I was a nervous wreck. Elle was disappointed that I wouldn't play along, and I think it was pretty clear I just wanted him to crawl home. I went into the kitchen for a long time, and when I came back to the bedroom, he was asleep. September 1st. My favorite way to take Crystal, I sit backwards on the toilet with the seat down, facing the wall, the green jade box I made in Oregon on the tank lid. I always cut the speed on the Patti Smith Radio Ethiopia album. I use a razor, then snort it with a straw, and when I'm through, I stand outside the bathroom and think of how nice my jade box is. September 17th, Ithaca, New York. This is the third autumn in a row I've gone off to pick apples. Avi and I left Raleigh on Tuesday in his Volvo and drove through Virginia, then to his parents' house in Pittsburgh. We arrived in Ithaca yesterday. Last night we saw the movie Manhattan on campus and slept in a graveyard beneath a headstone that read, Boys. Along the way, we picked up a hitchhiker, a guy from Queens going to Buffalo. Now Avi can't find his traveler's checks, so we're going to fill out a police report. September 24th, Knowlesville, New York. Avi and I found rooms at this hotel in Knowlesville. It's run by a man named Brad, who has 9 children by 2 marriages. Here are his 3 rules. 1. No enjoyment of showers on Friday and Saturday nights. This doesn't mean they can't be taken, but they have to be short. The bar features country and western music on weekends, and if we use all the hot water, there won't be enough for the broads in the ladies' room. Hey, he said, put yourself in my shoes. 2. It's all right if you bring a cunt up to your rooms for the night, but hey, 2 nights, 3 nights, and you gotta pay for it. Put yourself in my shoes. 3. Pay in advance. We hit a dog last night while trying to find the hotel. Avi swears it was a terrier, but to me it looked like a poodle. We knocked on 7 doors, searching for its owners, most of them trailer doors with loud TVs inside. No, it's not ours, people would say. We got a retriever. We got a collie. The lady down the road has dogs, maybe 100, maybe 50. At night they bark, a din so great you need earplugs, but us, we're used to it. Good night, boys. We follow our noses to the house, which smells like dog shit. How many do you have? Avi asks the woman, who answers, enough. She says the poodle or terrier we hit wasn't hers. Then we drive back and find that the dog is no longer there by the side of the road. It's run off, so we give up. October 1st. Avi and I went to Rochester for the weekend and had a car accident. My first. I was disappointed. No blood. I would have enjoyed just a trickle. First, the stick shift came off in Avi's hand, so we spent the day at George's brother's house. George is a picker, and his brother is a mechanic. All I did was sit in a folding chair and drink grape juice. It was all right. Then later, while Avi was driving, the hood opened up. He couldn't see where we were going. And when we struck a telephone pole, my head hit the windshield and broke it. No blood, though. None at all. October 14th. There was a major fight at the hotel last night between the owner, Brad, and his daughter, Ginger, who is 18. Brad, where are my goddamn pants? In the dryer. No, they're not. Somebody took my goddamn pants. Wasn't me. Was too. The sound of someone being slapped. Bitch. Go ahead. Tie me up and gag me like you did to Mom, bitch, whore, I hate you. I hate this goddamn place. I'm sick and tired of being called a whore. Who called you a whore? Three people. I'm getting out of here. I'll go live on the streets. You think I'm such a whore? I'll go live like one. I hate you. I hate you. You don't care. I don't care. I'll go to Albion or Medina. Exit Brad. Enter stepmother. Stepmother, just because everybody calls you a whore doesn't mean you have to act like one. I'm sick of it. I don't want to wait tables for him no more. Everybody calls me a whore just because I got big tits. Who called you one? Sugar. Sugar did. Sugar's got an ass-whooping coming. Last week, under Avi's window, a man from the hotel bar hit a woman for dancing with another man. When we mentioned it to Brad, he said that if she was dancing with someone else, she deserved to be beaten. October 19th. Today we began picking Golden Delicious, the most fragile. I was on the end row, beside an avenue of poplars, and while working, I thought of my sister Amy. At lunch, Avi and I took 35 apples and sent them in a box to the gang back in Raleigh. Each one we wrapped in something different, a sock, a glove, a Xerox of an apple. There were Macintoshes, McCowans, Goldens, and Northern Spies, each then tied in a string with a name tag on it. This was payday. So far, I have $400 in savings. October 26th. It must have snowed 12 times today, though never for more than 3 minutes at a stretch. That didn't stop us from picking, though. In the morning over coffee, Doreen, our waitress, who last month told us that at the age of 6 she was raped by her father, announced that she once worked at a carnival gaming booth and is now a lesbian living in a trailer with her girlfriend, Rocky. I said I was gay, too, and she seemed happy, and pointed out other gay customers. That woman over there dressed like a man? She's a dyke who drives a truck and is named Pee-wee. Doreen has Rocky's face decoupaged to her keychain and told me that the two of them were married last year at a gay church in Florida. October 28th. Jean and George, two pickers I overheard this morning. Jean, you're picking too slow, George. If you hurry up, we can get out of here. George, you're the slow one. Jean, my breakfast hasn't affected me yet. George, honey, your breakfast is in my pants. November 6th. Picking ended. I feel like camp is over. In the barn, a party. A long table was set up, and I liked watching everyone but me get plastered. Lots of silly speeches. It's interesting to work with people for almost 6 weeks, but never see them all together. December 8th, Raleigh. I started work back at the breakfast house today and learned that my gas company credit rating has slipped to a B. Was ill all day yesterday. When the meth catches up to you, you find yourself paying for it. When on a spree, I'm convinced I can smoke 3 packs of cigarettes, not eat, and run all over town with no consequences. January 1st, Raleigh. I gave away all my meth yesterday. It's either give it up or become an addict and lose all my hair and teeth. I never sleep or eat anymore. I never leave my apartment. January 26th. I've been a mature 23-year-old adult for 1 month. Last night, I lay in bed from 3 o'clock until 4:30, starting to panic. Some meth this morning, some now. I think I'll give the rest away because after several days and nights it starts to get hairy. I get a lot done, though. Made 10 valentines, started on a shroud, took some egg crates and attached them to a broiler pan and a great photo of a chicken from the Washington Post. It all came together, all this stuff in my closet. I've started peeing in my kitchen into empty jars, then replacing the lids and putting them on the shelf. I'm considering saving a month's worth. February 7th. Last night, up till 5 a.m., finished 4 more crates, took far too much speed in the course of the day, and spent today coming down, down, down. Slept until noon, took a bath without bothering to rinse the thick layer of Comet from the bottom of the tub. Went back to bed until 4, then another bath, and up to begin my day. Bought baby bottles, toothpaste, aspirin. February